Hello, and welcome to the Heathrow results for the 6 months to the 30th of June 2017. Throughout this session, all telephone participants will be in listen-only mode, and afterwards there will be a question and answer session. Also, just to remind you, this session is being recorded. Today, I'm pleased to present John Holland-Kaye, Chief Executive Officer, Javier Echave, the Chief Financial Officer, and Andrew Effiong, Director of Treasury. Gentlemen, please begin.
Thank you. Well, a warm welcome to everyone here and to those on the line. I feel like a talk show host, having been given such a warm welcome. And here in the room, we have a set of chairs, so it really does feel like it's going to be a late-night chat show here. But without the swigging of whiskey, I'm glad to say. So welcome to those on the line. We're going to just run through our performance for the first half of this year. I'm going to talk through the operational highlights. Javier will talk about financial performance, then I'll just update on our strategic agenda, and then we'll take some questions at the end. And if you're viewing remotely, then you can view the presentation through the link on the invitation, or you can see it directly on our website. So moving on to slide three, a strong first half of 2017. It's been a fantastic start to 2017. So really strong operational performance, the best operational measures we've seen in anyone's memory. Good financial performance, and we're making strategic progress. So very pleased that we were named once more the best airport in Western Europe. That's the third time running. And if you think about where we were 10 years ago, we have come a long, long way since then. A record 37.1 million passengers choosing to travel through Heathrow. That's up nearly 4%. But interesting, also cargo up over 9%. And some of that is about exchange rates, exporters getting on with their business, UK being more attractive for passengers to come and visit, but also UK tourists still travelling overseas, typically going for slightly less long than they would otherwise have done, but still going on their holidays. From a financial point of view, we've been seeing the cost efficiencies coming through, so I'm glad that that we're still delivering cost savings. But we've also been able to boost our retail spending, and that's more people spending more when they do. And that's backed up by a very significant investment in our retail offer and in some of the leisure services at the airport. So revenue's up to just under £1.4 billion for the first half, up 4.1%. We've actually been bringing aeronautical charges down. Operating costs were down 1.3% on an underlying basis, and EBITDA up just under 7% to £835 million. On the financing side, we raised just over £1 billion globally, and I want to thank everyone here for their help with doing that. That puts us in a very strong financial position. And then finally, our expansion program remains bang on track, and I'll update on that in a few moments. So in terms of traffic on slide four, you'll see this is good, strong performance right across the board. We're seeing quite a lot of growth out to Asia and through the Middle East, and a lot of the growth in Middle Eastern routes is actually traffic which is then going forward to places like China and some of the other growing Asian markets. And that's a great opportunity for us. When we have more capacity at Heathrow, we'll be able to offer direct services to other major cities in China, and that will help to strengthen the UK's role as a major trading nation. Good growth as well down in Latin America and in North America, so really encouraged by that. But we've also seen growth in domestic travel, and that's been helped by a reduction in domestic passengers that we brought in January this year, and by new services from Flybe to Aberdeen and Edinburgh, and I'm really pleased to see that that is being hugely successful. So moving on to slide five, just really a comparison with how we are doing compared to some of our European competitors. You'll see airports such as Schiphol in Amsterdam and Madrid doing very well. That really gives a sense for the growth opportunity that could be ours. Why would you fly through Schiphol when you can fly through Heathrow, I hear you say? You're exactly right. That is the opportunity we have here. But look, here we are with our two runways full, with Frankfurt and Charles de Gaulle with plenty of capacity, and yet we're growing as fast as or faster than they are. That just shows the strength of Heathrow as a market. Now, if you move on to operational performance, we measure our passenger satisfaction continually. I'm really pleased to see we are continuing to be right up in the top quartile among European airports. The second quarter of this year was the best performance we've ever had at this time of year, and we will keep on improving on that. And you can see underneath that some of the reasons that's driving it. The best punctuality that we've ever had, 83%. And I mentioned 10 years ago, it was only 63% 10 years ago. That meant that there's a good chance your flight would be heavily delayed. Now you would expect to be traveling on time. But also baggage performance, again, the best baggage performance we have ever seen. And in fact, we're disappointed when we have a month which isn't a record at the moment. And that's due to very tight and close control and a focus on giving passengers what they really need, traveling smoothly and quickly through the airport on time and traveling with their bags. So if I move on to expansion, I think I've used this slide before, just to update you on how we are doing as we move towards securing planning consent towards the end of 2020. And a lot has happened. The government has completed their consultation on the national policy statement. The CAA has been getting on with the regulatory process, and I'll talk about that in a moment. We are building up now to our first consultation period. So we've been looking at options for how we can deliver expansion. And what's changed in the last 6 months is we've really started to work closely with airlines to understand what their needs are going to be, hear their ideas for what they want from an expanded airport, including airlines who don't currently operate at Heathrow. And we've been able to modify some of our plans. And we are making good progress towards meeting the challenge the Secretary of State made of expanding Heathrow at close to current charges. So we're trying to balance having a world-class airport that connects to, that will be the best connected airport in the world, one of the most sustainable airports in the world, so, delivering commitments to local communities, but also keeping it affordable. And we are making good progress towards that. And so already we have cut the total cost of building the expanded airport by several billion pounds. We've been able to look at options for phasing it better. But I've also been encouraged by the level of interest from airlines who want to grow their businesses at a faster rate than we had been anticipating. And all the combination of those lower spend, phase better, faster growth gets us towards that target of expansion at close to current charges. And it would be pretty remarkable if we can do all that and deliver what will be a really world-class airport. And it's not often you hear large infrastructure projects talking about costs coming down. Normally, they only go the other way. So I'm pleased with the progress that we're making there. The next big phase will be the government designating the national policy statement, which will be in the first half of next year. And again, I'm pleased by the confidence and the drive coming from the government to make that happen, and by the cross-party support that we enjoy. So moving on to slide nine, the CAA has been making good progress on the regulatory process. They have announced their intention a few months ago to extend Q6, which was due to end at the end of 2018. It will now go to the end of 2020. And potentially could go longer so that it's aligned with the start of the expansion program. So that makes a lot of sense. And we are waiting to hear what the regulatory package will be for that final year. We're encouraged that they've talked about financeability and affordability being at the heart of the regulatory construct. We need to balance those two. And I'm sure that that's important to you as much as it is to our shareholders. They've also been helpful in laying out some of the other principles. A RAB-based regulatory process and a single till, that's encouraging in terms of stability, indexation of the cost of debt, and maintaining RPI through at least until 2025, which again is something that I think, a good piece of consistency compared to where people had been expecting. That is now out of consultation. We'll be responding to that by the 22nd of September. We are waiting to hear on the consultation on the kind of cost of capital, the pricing regime for the second extension year to Q6, and on so-called Category C costs. And these are the construction costs that go with expansion, and we'd like to pin that down as soon as possible. And then in terms of our own business plan for H7, which is the first building period of expansion, we'll be putting that together towards the end of 2018. At that point, we should have a single master plan that we are consulting on, so we know exactly what we're doing, and we'll have a better sense of the costs and revenues that go with that. So let me move on to slide 11, which is the financial highlights, and I'll ask Javier just to run us through those.
Thank you, John. Welcome all, and thank you for joining us today. So complementing excellent service and operational performance, the financial picture in slide 11 remains very strong, with adjusted EBITDA up 6.9% in the period, underpinning the upgraded forecast that we share with you and the rest of the community in our June investor report. Getting into those details, a revenue growth of 4.1% reflects, as John mentioned, surging traffic and increased retail and ancillary revenue streams, enabling us to deliver better value for our passengers and airlines, with, of course, at the same time that we are able to deliver lower charges to passenger customers. Despite having materially higher demand, our cost efficiency program continues to deliver strongly, as you can see in the slide. And in terms of balance sheet, the growth in our regulatory asset base has picked up in recent months, reflecting high inflation, with the retail price index increasing by 1 percentage point since December 2016. In terms of net debt, the relative movement between Heathrow SP and Heathrow Finance reflects short-term initiatives we are taking to minimize interest costs over the next six to 9 months, which I will touch in more detail very shortly. At the end of the period, the headroom to Heathrow Finance leverage covenants remains in line with our 5 percentage point target, and hopefully that illustrates what we have tried to deliver in the last few periods, which is no surprises on the debt front. Turning to slide 12, let's look in a bit more detail the strong performance of our revenues. As you will know, the majority of our revenue comes from aeronautical income, and our results demonstrate another period where we continue delivering better value for passengers. Indeed, outstanding service standards were complemented by lower prices, with average aeronautical income per passenger down 2.3% year-on-year. Looking at absolute terms, aeronautical income was up 1.5%, driven by traffic growth of 3.9%, which was also offset by both the effects of our current RPI minus 1.5% tariff formula and the reversal of the yield concentration that we faced last year. Moving into retail performance, again, retail performance gained even greater momentum in Q2, and for the year-to-date, revenue is up £33 million, improvement year-on-year, or on passenger terms, 7.6% increase versus the same period. If we were focusing just on the last quarter, in the Q2, we saw a growth of 8.7%. In terms of what's driving that, so apart from buoyant traffic, of course, one of the key drivers of retail performance was the sterling depreciation that we have seen in the last 12 months since the June 2016, which continue to be particularly noticeable in duty and tax-free and airside specialist shops. Additionally, in this period, we have seen a strong increase in retail participation. Retail participation went up almost 4 percentage points, and that means more than 1.3 million passengers participating in our retail proposition versus prior periods. In terms of catering also saw a great performance in Q2, driven by the redevelopment of some of our outlets, primarily Terminal 5, and where you can see new products, including Itsu and Pret A Manger. And in Q2, performance in other retail income and car parking continue improving strongly. The redevelopment of luxury stores in Terminal 4, completed in 2016, is rendering and starting to contribute to the overall performance. And it's worth to remind everyone that, of course, given the regulatory single-till yield framework that Heathrow operates under, the larger commercial value we can generate from our premium retail space, the lower the charges to airline and passengers in future periods. Moving on, slide 13 illustrates also an outstanding cost performance. At first sight, operating costs were merely flat overall versus the prior period. However, our underlying performance on costs continues to be strong. So first of all, we held reported costs flat despite welcoming an extra 1.4 million passengers and maintaining record passenger service. That's equivalent to a cost reduction of almost 4% on a per-passenger basis. Additionally, it's worth reminding that in 2016, utilities costs included the benefit of a significant one-off non-cash credit related to the renegotiation of a major contract. And at the same time, in 2017, we have started to capitalize expansion costs rather than expensing them. So if we were to strip out the credit worth £14 million that we faced in 2016, as well as the effect of the capitalization of £7 million of expansion costs in 2017, the pro forma absolute operating costs in the period would be down 1.3% and 5% on a per-passenger basis. In terms of drivers behind this, three key areas driving the savings were operational costs, maintenance costs, and other costs. We always need to have an other, otherwise we would be nothing to say. So in operational costs, benefits from the renegotiated air traffic services contract with NATS, together with lower commercial expenditure and lower insurance claims in the year, help driving costs down. Second, maintenance costs were also supported by efficiencies in several F&M contracts. And finally, my favorite other costs decreased mainly due to the start of the capitalization of expansion-related costs, as just discussed. Overall, we are on track to deliver our £600 million target of cost savings by 2018, and we expect that combination of actions, continuing focus on energy demand management, recurring savings from further major contract renegotiations, as well as full-year effect of organizational changes implemented earlier in the year, will continue supporting further efficiencies and savings. Looking at slide 14, the strong performance, operating performance we had in H1 generated over £800 million of cash from operations. That number was £700 million just a year ago. And this was sufficient to fund all our capital investment, external cash interest cost accretion, and the dividends paid to our shareholders in the half year. Taking into account all other outflows in the period, net debt increased nearly £550 million since the end of 2016 to a total net debt of £12.5 billion, largely driven by a temporary use of Class A and B debt to repay loan facilities at both Heathrow Finance and at a holding company called ADI Finance 2 Limited. This was the driver of net restricted payments being as high as £641 million in the period. We expect this temporary increase in Class A and B gearing to reverse in the months to come and also minimize interest payments across the group over the next 6 to 9 months. Turning to slide 15, illustrates the robustness of our balance sheet measure in terms of gearing. The Class A and B gearing ratios have temporarily increased, as alluded to just now, and remain comfortably below their respective trigger levels. At Heathrow Finance, the 84.8% gearing is slightly lower than at the end of H1 2016, helped by the impact of the recent pickup in inflation, as described earlier. However, Heathrow Finance gearing has temporarily increased as we simplify the capital structure by absorbing a significant part of ADI Finance 2 legacy debt of £310 million into Heathrow Finance. A small amount of debt will remain in ADI Finance 2 until no later than 2019. Moving to some more successful developments in our financing activities on slide 16, as you may remember from our last set of results, we were targeting raising no more than £750 million in Class A debt in 2017, and we have now completed a substantial portion of this target. As always, I would like to take the opportunity, now that I can see you face to face and in the phone, to thank you again for your constant support, both trade and investor community. You are absolutely part of this success in delivering our capital market activities. One of the key highlights of the recent months is our successful return to the euro market in June with a new 15-year 500 million bond issued with a 1 7/8 coupon. The deal is always a reminder of our commitment of continue accessing and coming back to markets as a repeated user in every public market we enter. We also made a fantastic return to the bond market at Heathrow Finance level. The new 10-year £275 million transaction in May contributed to further simplify our financing arrangements as we look to collapse the current four layers of debt into three-layer structure. It was also, we believe, the lowest coupon regulated business holding company bond in history by a significant margin. I'm confident, and you will agree, that with a coupon of just 3 7/8, I'm proud to see that even Andrew and the Treasury team are heavily defying the very definition of what used to be called a high-yield bond. As a result of these activities, our current average life of debt stands at 11.7 years, as well as strengthening further our liquidity position. Indeed, our liquidity horizon is now September 2019, which, taking into account, among other things, over 2.1 billion of undrawn debt and cash resources, move us 6 months after the Brexit negotiation deadline, which is a fantastic position to be in. Overall, we remain very encouraged by the continued strong global support for the Heathrow credit across multiple markets, and this gives us great confidence in the context of financing expansion. So, wrapping up on slide 17 and before moving on to the more strategic developments, the first half of 2017 has been very encouraging with continued traffic and retail revenue growth while delivering on cost, driving the recent upgrade to our financial forecast, which anticipates our full-year EBITDA to reach over £1.7 billion. We are winning on all fronts and supported by the excellent work of a team of 75,000 colleagues at Heathrow. I would like to thank you again all for your attention and coming here today, and I'm now going to hand back to John. Thank you.
Hi, Javier. So, just in terms of strategic update, you know our vision is to give passengers the best airport service in the world, and you'll have seen we're making good progress there. And in terms of the four priorities that we work on, it starts with our people. And there's a lot that we're doing there around training our frontline colleagues and in their current roles and moving into management positions. And of course, doing lots of fun things. And I know that some of you participated in the Midnight Marathon and helped us to raise over £50,000 for our local community charities and Oxfam. So I really want to thank you for your support. And I hope you had fun doing that with our team. Coming up, we are encouraging our colleagues to shift over to electric vehicles. So we'll be shortly launching a green car salary sacrifice scheme. And that's part of our move to make Heathrow an ultra-low emission zone by 2025. We also want to make sure that Heathrow is a place where people can be themselves and go as far as they can. And having had a very successful launch to our women's network, we'll be launching our disability and LGBT network shortly, and getting on with training our frontline security officers. So good progress on Mojo. From a service point of view, I'm sure you've all enjoyed the new T5 First Wing. I've had great feedback about that, designed specifically for the investor community. But for those of you not going through there, you'll have missed out the benefits of self-backdrop in Terminal 5 and perhaps the Flight Connection Center, which is helping passengers connect from international to domestic services much more quickly, and that's been a fabulous improvement. And we're doing a lot in terms of rail connectivity. And again, we want to get as many people out of their cars onto public transport as possible. We've been discounting Heathrow Express in off-peak periods, and if you're travelling in August, then it's only £15 to get to Heathrow in 15 minutes, which is great value. And if you're coming with your kids, then they won't be charged anything. So that's a good opportunity. Or you can book in advance and pay as little as £5.50. So that's great. But we've also been working with TfL to make Heathrow an integrated transport hub. And part of that is to increase the frequency of Crossrail services coming in. and they will now be increased from 4 to 6 and potentially to 8, which in addition to Heathrow Express means we'll have a train every 5 or 6 minutes, and all of which will be on Oyster, so it'll be a very convenient service for passengers, and will now serve Terminal 5, so very pleased with that. Lots of things coming up. If you're travelling with your kids, then there'll be lots of fun things around the terminals. We have a new well-being gym for passengers in Terminal 2, and 3 new Chinese destinations, including Qingdao. So if you feel like a beer, then come to Heathrow. In terms of beta plan, we've been doing a lot of work with our airlines around encouraging more leisure travellers to travel off-peak, including new Kids Go Free services offered with British Airways on domestic routes. That's been very popular and has helped to boost domestic connectivity. And coming up, we've got a lot of new stores. The Louis Vuitton store in Terminal 3 has actually just opened, so while you're on your way to Qingdao, you can grab yourself a handbag. We've got the Heathrow Gin Festival starting, and we're continuing to work behind the scenes just to simplify the way we do things and take out cost. And then I've talked a lot about sustainable growth. I was really pleased with the launch of our sustainability strategy, Heathrow 2.0. That will make us probably the most sustainable airport in the world, certainly a major airport. And it's important that we take a lead from an environmental point of view. And so I was pleased to see the government's air quality plans coming out. We will be at the cutting edge of implementing that air quality plan. We've got the first consultation coming up towards the end of this year. We'll be shortlisting also the logistics hubs, which will see us build as much as possible of the new airport off-site in the UK. And we are working with other big infrastructure projects to see if we can help them to shift the UK supply chain to off-site manufacture. And then at the same time, we are training our managers and leaders in the business so that they sustainability becomes just a normal part of what they do. So a good progressive agenda, and as Javier said, we are delivering on all fronts and winning on all fronts, and so you don't often get moments like this, so I'm glad to be able to celebrate this with our team. So thank you all for your time, for being with us today, and for your support. We'll now open up for questions, and I'll invite Andrew and Javier to come and join us on in the talk show setup. And first of all, we'll open up for questions in the room, and then we'll go out to the phone. Thank you. So let me just see, are there any questions in the room? Yes,
got one. Hi, Stephen Moore from HSBC. There's always a risk of delays when government approvals are required. So in relation to expansion, which of the approvals coming up, either development consent orders or CAA half seven regulation, are the ones that keep you guys away that you think might be the cause of delays?
I think we're pretty well placed in terms of timetable. Once we get past the national policy statement, the development consent order has a fixed timetable, so that should run in a pretty smooth way. And the success rate of development consent orders is very high. Something like 45 out of 46 have been successful working to their timetable. So we're very confident once we get into that phase. There's been a slight delay with the national policy statement simply because the election delayed the appointment of the Transport Select Committee, which is one of the important parts of the NPS. But I think we're well placed, and we're sort of planning with confidence to get this delivered. So our aim is planning consent at the end of 2020 and first flights on the runway in 2025.
Thank you.
Thank you. Another question.
Thank you. A couple of questions. One, two on operations. The first one is the performance in cargo, which is very impressive. What is driving that? In the slide, I think you mentioned North America, but is this something that is happening, you know, more economic activity across the board, or that's like a one-off factor explaining this increase in the cargo activity? The other one is, Heathrow is a very busy airport, and you run a tight schedule. Is there any risk of this legislation for flights to the U.S. disrupting you know, transatlantic flights in Heathrow, you know, diminishing the number of slots or making it, you know, trickier for the airlines to deliver. And the final one is on regulation. I mean, we have plenty of time to go, but is traditionally what says in terms of capital a good reference to what the CAA might suggest? Thank you.
Thank you.
So if I can pick up on cargo, I mean, cargo, we're seeing growth pretty much across the board, and I think the underlying theme here is the exchange rate message that we saw some growth in exports in the second half of last year, but we've seen faster growth in the first half of this year. And I think what's happening there is that UK exports suddenly became better value for money and were more competitive globally. It took a bit of time to get some of the sales made, the deals set up, and now that's been starting to come through in the first half. Now we'll soon be passing the anniversary of the Brexit vote, so we won't get the annualised benefit anymore. But I think it is probably an indicator that UK exporters are getting out there to global markets and making the most of the pricing benefit. In terms of US flight legislation, I guess you're talking about the security measures being put in place by the US. They've actually already started, and I don't think anyone's noticed the impact of them. So we're pretty efficient at working with airlines to make sure that passengers aren't disturbed in their flights with those kind of changes. Of course, we keep a close eye on that, try to make sure that whatever changes happen will have little effect on passengers' journeys. Javi, do you want to cover the question on regulation?
Yeah, well, I think in any being a regulated airport, of course, we monitor closely what other regulators are doing, and worries of what now is that they have launch a consultation, so it's still a consultation, and of course different stakeholders will provide their views. We don't have a specific measurement in terms of correlation between what's happening in water and what's happening in airports. Definitely we are slightly different animals, and therefore they are not necessarily the same things happening, and we have seen cases where there's some correlation, but there are other cases where the CAA takes different views. So for example, in their consultation they have taken a completely different view in terms of the place to go with the debate between RPI and CPI, while Ofwat and Ofgem have strong views in terms of moving to CPI. CAA is showing more inclination towards RPI. So we are in consultation scenarios. We will monitor very closely, but there's still quite a lot of time to go, especially with based on the latest delay and extension of Q6. Now Q6 will extend at least to the end of 2020. So from now to then, markets could change quite a lot, and therefore changes in cost of capital can change materially.
I think there's one other thing also on Ofwat. I'm not aware of the details myself, but my understanding is that alongside discussion on cost of capital, they're actually introducing the scope for much greater incentives. So again, you have to look at the package in the round in terms of drawing too many conclusions.
Great, thank you. Any other questions?
Hi, so Mark Costa here from RBS. Just a question on sort of free skies movements across Europe, and I guess I just wanted to know if this was something that the airlines are particularly sort of worried about and discussing with you on the sort of day-to-day basis, and then ultimately what do you think, if difficult question, you think that will land?
So this is about the single European aviation market, which unless something else is put in place, comes to an end at the end of March 2019. And that would severely limit the ability for European airlines to fly to the UK and vice versa, which sounds a pretty extraordinary position to place ourselves in. And the issue we have is that for most other trading sectors, we have the World Trade Organization rules to fall back on. They don't apply to aviation, so there is no safety net. And to some extent, there's no point having a World Trade Organization rules on other sectors if you can't get your goods to where they need to get to. So it's critical that for both Europe and the UK that we sort this out ahead of time. And I think people are starting to wake up to that. So getting the aviation rules right at an early stage, in the same way that free movement of people is being discussed at an early stage, or the rights of EU citizens is being discussed at an early stage, is fundamental. I think the government is starting to understand that, and I think European governments are too. And as soon as holiday makers realise they can't book flights for summer 2019, and as soon as the Spanish and the other European holiday markets realise that nobody's booking their hotels, if they haven't sorted out by then, it will soon become a political issue that they need to get sorted out. So I think it's going to be resolved. The same applies with transatlantic flights to the US. They currently fall under EU regulation. That's going to get resolved as well, not least because it's in our mutual commercial interest that it happens, but also because I suspect that President Trump wants to demonstrate his support for the UK and make sure we can keep on flying. And the US, the airlines in America have made it completely clear to the European Union that they will fly to Heathrow after Brexit, and that they're not going to be transferring their flights to other European hubs. So they will make sure that they fly here. So that's a very strong position to be in. Thank you. Any other questions in the room? So should we open up the line to anyone dialing in?
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, on the telephone lines, if you would like to ask a question, please press 01 on your telephone keypads. You can cancel at any time by pressing 02, and we will now have a brief pause while telephone questions are being registered. Once again, if you would like to ask a question on the telephone lines, please press 01 on your telephone keypads now. And we have a question from the line of Spiros Kasparos of Loomis Sayles. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Thank you for the call. I have one question. Can you please remind us how much debt sits above the PLC, the finance PLC level? Thank you.
Well, I'd like to answer that myself, but I think I'll let Andrew pick that one up.
So, as of today, literally today, there's zero. So since the half year, the $310 million of legacy facilities that were ADI Finance 2 Limited have been repaid. And then in the next 6 to 9 months, a very small facility of £75 million will be drawn and remain there till no later than 2019, at which point we intend to fully complete the evolution from four layers to three layers, Spiros. So hopefully that's clear.
Fantastic. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Once again, just to remind everyone, if you would like to ask a question, please press 01 on your telephone keypads now. And we have no further questions on the telephone lines, so if I could hand the call back to our speakers for closing comments.
Fantastic. Well, thank you for joining us today. Thank you for dialing in. Thanks for your questions. And thanks for your support over the last 6 months. We will be busy over the next 6 months and 6 years and more than that as we get on with building our expanded Heathrow, and we will need your support to do it, so we really appreciate this kind of engagement. And if you're getting a break, I hope you have a fantastic summer, and we look forward to seeing you at our next results beginning of next year. So thank you very much.